back. This is Wine and Dine in LA with Anoush. Today we are talking with an artist and garagist distiller. His name is Van. So first part, we learned all about how he got interested in distilling and in a way why he's an artist. We also have Irina with us, sommelier and cognac educator. Before the break, Irina asked a great question that would be beneficial to know. There will be details that you guys can learn about the whole process. I'm going to hand you the microphone.
Yeah, so after you've distilled several ready-made, let's say, products like vodka and wine, you started distilling from fresh fruit. You had to learn the art of fermentation.
Yes, and I have to tell you that probably that's one of the most difficult parts of making alcohol, because the distilling part is not changing. Yeah, every still has its own character. You know, probably if you buy the same, you know, a still from the same manufacturer, like three different stills, they all will distill differently. But it's still, you know, you keep the temperature, you keep the, you know, you do everything the way you're supposed to do, and it distills. Where fermentation is where things can go right or wrong, you know. And it took me a while to kind of learn to get a decent product.
What did you ferment first?
Grapes. I started doing grapes because you can find them all the time. You know? Mm-hmm. So I got grapes. You know, I learned how to make wine because pretty much until you distill, it is wine. It's just the wine goes different way when you want to make a wine, where for this it doesn't have to get that complicated. You know, you just get when you get to the right amount of the alcohol in it, and you can distill, but still is the same, you know, same process.
So I'm going to have you go through the steps. So you go buy the grapes. You don't buy them in the market, I'm assuming.
Well, you can buy them, anywhere you can, preferably cheap.
Yeah.
You know.
But you use like not table grapes. You use wine grapes.
In the beginning, I just bought grapes from the market.
Oh, okay.
You know, I found this cheap market that had cheap grapes. So, again, for vodka is not that
important. Interesting.
You know, because the only thing you need is that flavor, the grape flavor, which some mashes are pleasant to drink the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say I made from honey. I made med.
Mm-hmm.
Med, I still have some, literature. It was very pleasant to drink the way it is. It's the wine that everybody drank.
Yeah, mead is wonderful. Yeah. It's delicious.
So,
okay, so you go buy the grapes. Do you do the...
And go through the whole process. You mash them.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, Did you put yeast in it or you let it ferment naturally?
Well, you mash them.
Mm-hmm.
You probably need to add some water to it. And then you measure the contest. I have a thermometer, you put it in, and it tells you approximately how much alcohol you can gravity. It's called measuring the gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So it tells you how much alcohol you can possibly get
per
volume inside. Like when you buy a wine, it says 13.5 or 14 something, you know. So that. So when you get there, you can do both ways. You can add yeast, which is a good idea, that's what I do. But you can just leave it alone, and somehow it will get yeast from the surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
That happened to me a few times. So, you put an airlock on it, you close it tight, you put an airlock, and you watch that thing breathe. It goes, you know.
The
bubbles.
2 weeks, 10 days?
It depends on the weather. It depends how warm it is. If it's warmer, it goes faster. If it's colder, it slows down. Actually, if it gets too close, like under 60, you have to kind of warm it up somehow. You know, it happened too. So I had a blanket over it, you know, try to keep it a little warm.
Mine is usually the opposite. I have to put like ice blocks into it to cool it down, so it goes, the fermentation goes slower.
Yeah. So, again, your end product is wine.
Yeah.
My end product,
yeah,
it doesn't matter. So, yeah.
So wine is done.
So wine is done. Then you take the stuff, you know, outside. You sift it. You get just the liquid.
Mm-hmm.
Again, to avoid the scorching, you can pour it just the way it is. But then you have to be careful. You have to try to steer it. There are some distilling machines that have steering mechanisms inside, in order not to have the scorching, you know, problem. It just steers all the time. But you know, for this setup, you know, we just
so we are actually sitting and I'm straight looking at how it is being distilled. So there is a, which I called a barrel, but Van corrected me. He said it's not a barrel, it's a
pot still.
Looks like a barrel in a plain words, like for people to have a picture.
Well,
like
it's a keg.
So this keg is sitting on a burning fire, and it's pretty warm outside, so it's pretty warm inside too. So then whatever is inside, which was the wine, well, in this case, it was a pomegranate
distillate that was scorched.
Yeah, that was scorched. It's now boiling in there, and then it goes through a tube that has a copper, two sets of copper meshes, right? Do I remember correctly?
Yeah.
And then it cools down, and then it drips down. So, question for Irina. You have your certification in cognac educator. You spent quite a lot of time, and you have seen lots of places where they distill. So, how would you compare?
The basic process is the same.
Okay. But is this exciting to see this?
Of course.
Yeah.
It's always, it amazes me how people do makeshifts, things like this out of supplies that are easy to come by. So yes, of course I've seen much fancier stills. That's why this is so amazing, that it's a still made out of a keg.
But haven't seen so many. It doesn't necessarily, if it's a fancy machine, it doesn't mean that the product is better, correct?
I mean, they probably have more possibilities of, you know, purifying their spirit. I don't know. I wouldn't know.
But when you tasted Van's spirit, which one was it at an event that you said it was?
I've had his pear brandy.
Pear brandy.
Yes. And it was really nice. But I mean, the pear brandy is not intended for aging it for 50 years either. It's meant to be consumed fresh. So you want from a fruit brandy, what you want to taste, to smell and to taste is the purity of fruit.
So we have here, we're going to switch to tasting a little bit. Okay, we're going to have Irina taste and I will smell, and Van will tell us what's what in the cups.
Pear. Oh, that's apricot.
Okay, so apricot. Tell us how you made the apricot.
Apricots, you know, it's very hard to come by to find apricots here in U.S. that are actually taste like apricots. The apricots here taste like grass.
Tastes like nothing.
Yeah, it tastes like nothing. But the last 2 years, some Armenian markets started to bring some apricots that are actually taste like apricots.
From Fresno or from Armenia?
From here.
Okay.
Not from Fresno, but from somewhere there, close to Fresno. And they actually taste like apricot. Probably, if you compare it to Armenia, the worst apricots from Armenia. But they taste like apricots. So last year I went and I bought, and they're expensive too, and I bought about 30 pounds, whatever that store had, they just got it. I bought everything they brought. So, and I made about...
I'm sure there were some grandmas who were mad at you for taking all the apricots away.
Probably. So, and I made, this brandy or vodka, what I call it, out of apricots.
Okay, so... going to have Irina to taste it and then tell us about it, and then what would you pair it with? Because we like to pair, right?
With food.
With food. What kind of food?
Any kind of food.
So do you think this needs to be chilled?
I would chill it a little bit, mm-hmm. Because I think that enhances the fruitiness of it. So yeah, I like fruit brandy from the fridge, but it's up to you, of course. It's up to personal taste, but it goes with any kind of food, any big table. When I met Vaughn and he brought his pear brandy, it was, I think it was mostly Russian food, which Russians consume with vodka. And there was regular vodka, which was Grey Goose, which is supposedly very good vodka, but everything went so much better with his pear brandy. Mm-hmm. So any kind of food will go with it.
Okay, so next one is that we're tasting here is which one? Is that
grape?
So grape, Italians call it grappa.
It depends where if it's distilled from grape pomace or wine. Uh-huh. If it's distilled from wine, it's a brandy, and grappa is typically distilled from
the pomace.
So when you have when you make your wine and you have the pomace, mm-hmm. give it to Vaughn and he'll make grappa out of it.
Yeah.
Okay, so this year I have Cabernet and Merlot.
Fantastic.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yes, I just had this idea.
Oh my god, brilliant.
This is from grapes.
Okay. Well, pomace.
No, this is from grapes. This is brandy.
What kind of grapes?
Not grappa.
So they it doesn't smell too grapey, mm-hmm. maybe because it's fairly neutral tasting grapes that are meant for eating, not winemaking.
That's exactly what it was.
So that's why it doesn't have a huge amount of character. That's why I thought that your pomace needs to be made into grappa.
Actually, this is not even from the store. This is from a friend that called me up and said, hey, my gardener just chopped up my grapes and I have about, you know, like 30, 40 pounds of grapes sitting on my table in my yard, so come and take it.
But they're eating grapes. They're not
eating grapes, green.
So they're
green,
like big and
green color, yeah. Mm-hmm. Green grapes or yellow grapes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's next?
Pear.
What kind of pear?
Again, I think it was like three different kind of pears in this, and I tried to find the pears were not. I was not so lucky with pears; they were not so aromatic. They didn't have a strong flavor, but mm-hmm. I smelled a few, and I found like three different kinds that had a pear, you know, smell. So I got them.
So apricot, I think, is my favorite so far, mm-hmm. because it has the most. Because
apricot has the most, and uh-huh. even though if I had more, if it was not just 30 pounds, if I had 60, the flavor would have been more intense.
Mm-hmm. But, so this, I'm not sure what this is, and why is it brown?
This is a some peach brandy that I made. And I just experimented and I put some oak chips in it.
Oh, okay. So it's we can see it's a brown spirit. So I was wondering what the oak treatment was.
Yeah.
It also smells very peachy.
Yeah.
And how long this has been aged?
With the oak chips, probably about a year.
A year.
Mm-hmm. And if you compare it, there is a math that you can do. It compares to I think like 4 or 5 years in a barrel if you mm-hmm. were aging it. But you know, I just made this. For fun.
The peach comes through.
Yeah,
it's very
because
peachy.
the peaches are here very good. Mm-hmm. The peach is actually, unfortunately, I don't have it because it doesn't last. You know, everybody's asking for it and everybody's drinking it. So the peaches are nice here. So the actually vodka is very nice.
Any plans of now, this is like a hobby, I'm assuming. So any plans on making this into a full-blown business?
You know, yes, actually, it started as a, you know, something fun. The name came, you know, as a funny name. I didn't think that I'll legalize it, you know, Vaganov.
Yeah, I was going to say, tell us about the name of
Vaganov is my name, actually, spelled one of the ways it's spelled in Russian. But it also sounds like Smirnov, like, you know, all of those, you know. So I'm saying it was started as a joke, but it kind of stuck, you know. And everybody started asking, hey, do you have Vaganov? Do you have Vaganov? My friends were calling, hey, can you bring a bottle of Vaganov?
So it's easy to pronounce. It flows on the tongue.
And it sounds familiar.
Yes, sounds familiar, yeah. What do you think? Do you like the name?
Yes, it's easy to remember. I had a classmate with that name, so yeah, it's easy to remember.
So when is the plan to go and like full on, you know, and then come participate at the Guinea Fest as one of the vendors?
Sure, you know, I would love to, definitely. But before that, I need to go through the process of legalizing, which takes about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to, and the process is that you have to find a place.
Yeah.
And you have to be in that place.
Mm-hmm.
If you move, then you have to do it all over again.
I see, because of the license.
So you have to get, to get the license, you need to get the place, and you have to be there for a year at least.
Mm.
It takes about a year, you know, to go through all of the process.
Do they have, like, you know, for the wine makers, they have, like, shared places where you can do custom crush? You can go and, like, rent their space and, say, use their fermenters, etc. Is there such place for the distillers?
Actually, the only thing, there are a few things that you need, of
mm-hmm.
course, to get the license. But one of the requirements is it cannot be residential.
Yeah.
It has to be, it considers manufacturing.
Yeah.
So there is no health or anything involved. You know, it's like making these bottles or making alcohol is the same in terms of manufacturing. And... You need the owner's signature, consent, in order to lease, in order to establish a distillery. Everything else is technical.
Hmm.
You know, you need running water, you need drainage, and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm sure that, you know, if there is a place that already makes alcohol, maybe even wine,
we think, right, Irina and I think that you should definitely mm-hmm. start making it commercial. We didn't talk much about your career as an artist and your art, but as soon as we walked in, Irina recognized a painting that she said, oh, is this the washing of the red horse? Baiting of the red horse. And you said, no, it's the... dead horse.
Baiting of the dead horse. Yeah, well, this is...
How do you get inspiration to draw? Does it come from your distillates?
No.
I guess no. If the horse drinks too much.
Yeah. No, actually, it's a whole different process. You know, it's many components have to come together, I think, for an artist to be able to create. It's something that you see, something that you hear, something that amazes you, you
mm-hmm.
know, something you think about, you know, you get inspired by something. Usually music does that for me.
Mm.
Events,
mm-hmm.
world events do that for me. You know, this particular painting was inspired by, well, inspired maybe not the correct word, but... by the current events between Russia and Ukraine, you know, which I think that is a horrible war because, you know, their brothers are killing each other.
Mm.
You know? So, and I think the painting, Baiting of the Red Horse, is a very famous, you know, Russian artist and famous, actually, painting in Russia. And it celebrates... life, in a way, the way I saw it. You know, it's this beautiful red horse in a beautiful blue pond. This young guy, you know, is sitting on a horse and baiting it, which is a completely different story, you know, on this painting, which is a dead horse different, completely different story on this painting, which is a green, dead, skinny horse with a very unhealthy looking guy sitting on it, and with a like black pond, dirty black pond, completely opposite of what you see there. So I think that's what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how
I was going to ask you if you have drawn anything after the war in Armenia, but this kind of like the this art came through between war in the Ukraine and Russia, but living through Armenia through all those years, have you painted anything reflective of that?
I did one painting, but I have to say that the war in Armenia is very painful and very personal for me.
Yeah.
So reflect on that is much harder for me.
That's
but
why
I painted one painting, and it's called War Mother.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a woman, it's a portrait of a woman that lost her son.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll show you later the picture. But yeah, that was the one painting that I could squeeze out of myself.
True.
I guess that's my way of taking it out of my system.
Yeah.
But it was, I couldn't paint for a year after that. My brain was completely empty.
You know, I want to end our conversation on a positive note, on a happy note. I want to thank Irina for introducing us to each other. And thank you so much for having us here today and sharing your beautiful distillates and the story, how you came to do all this. Hope to see you at the Armenian Wine and Spirit Festival, and then your product on the shelves of...